Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So welcome again for our fifth session on the essence of Bhagavad Gita, the middle six chapters, all about Bhakti Yoga. So we're going into chapter 11. In chapter 10, we skipped over a whole lot of verses from about verse 19 or 20 onwards, in which Krishna was again describing different features of the universe generally, things within the universe, but in terms of their connections with him, and encouraging Arjuna to be conscious of him, Krishna conscious, through understanding what these things are when he sees them. So we know in the seventh chapter Krishna did the same thing, and various other places. The ninth chapter there was some a whole lot of different examples. One of our acharyas counted them. I forget the number, something like, actually I just forget the number, but so many different examples. Krishna is saying, I'm this, I'm that, and so on like that. May I have some water, is that possible? Anyway, some water is required somehow. So in the 10th chapter we skipped over all these, like about 20 or so verses, where all these more examples are given, and let's just briefly mention a few here, because it's from this point that we go on into the 11th chapter. So like in text 20, Krishna says, I'm the super soul, I'm the beginning, middle and end of all beings. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu of lights, I'm the sun. Maruts, I'm Marichi. Of the Vedas, I'm the Sama Veda. Of demigods, I'm Indra. Of the senses, I'm the mind. So, you know, if we were to take this in a very, very literal and direct sense, Krishna says, amongst senses, I'm the mind. Then just consider your mind. I don't know what your mind's like. I know what mine's like. Are our minds worshipable? Well, sometimes if we think of Krishna, that's nice. But somehow, you know, if we get distracted sometime, then, you know, our mind is not something we would really want to offer arati to, or something like that. But the mind is very powerful, isn't it? Mind is amazingly powerful. Can do so many things. Where's that power coming from? You know, sometimes it becomes clear that it's not exactly coming from us, because sometimes we lose control of our minds, and they just, you know, cause us difficulty, and we try to control them. You know, sometimes we have problems with our minds. So this indicates that the mind is not, you know, exactly mine. It's something separate, and it has a power of its own, which sometimes we struggle to control. So that power is coming from Krishna. The power, not the mind itself. Well, I mean, in a certain sense, everything is coming from Krishna. But in terms of its functioning on an ongoing basis, then we can understand that there is a power there within the mind which is not totally under our control, But it's very powerful. So it's coming from Krishna. And like this, the devotee is able to recognize the hand of the Lord in all these different types of situations. And in this way, whatever the situation is, the devotee can appreciate the presence of the Lord. And in this way, the devotee can be Krishna conscious anywhere, anytime. Because whatever he sees Krishna. Or it stimulates him to remember Krishna. So this is the idea. And so many different examples are there of bodies of water on the ocean. So does that mean we should all immediately run down to the ocean and offer our obeisances inside the ocean? But the ocean is very impressive and very amazing. You know, sometimes, like recently, the power of the ocean was unleashed on some people, just a little bit, not that much actually, and what devastation it caused. So, you know, the power behind all of this is coming from Krishna. Of sacrifices, this is a nice one, of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names, japa. I hope, how many of you are chanting some japa every day? Okay. You're not? Okay, anyway, pretty good. And of immovable things, I'm the Himalayas. Of trees, I'm the banyan tree. Of sages, I'm among the demigods, I'm Narada. So what Krishna is doing here specifically is looking at least in many cases, certain groups of things, like of sacrifices. There are many sacrifices. But amongst sacrifices, I am the sacrifice of chanting the holy names. It's the best amongst the sacrifices. And, you know, like we mentioned the other day, somewhere amongst these verses, Krishna says, amongst fishes I'm the shark. So amongst fish, the best is the shark. And bodies of water, there are many lakes and different, you know, rivers or whatever, ponds. But amongst all bodies of water, the ocean. Oceans are the best. So in all these different groups, Krishna's selecting the best one and pointing out that the thing which makes it so special is my potency. I've given it, invested my potency in it. Among weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am Sarabi. And so on and so forth. So many examples are there. So, now coming into chapter 11 then, there's a beginning section. It is verse 1 to 9, and it's just setting the scene. In verses 1 to 4, well, in verse 1, verse 2, particularly verse 2, Krishna, or rather Arjuna, says that, you know, you have explained to me so many things, including your glory, like all these different examples of how Krishna has spread his potencies out in all these different features of this world. So then in 3, Arjuna is saying, you have explained to me about these potencies and how you're manifesting in all these different features of the material world, but now I want to see it. I want to see how you are, you know, whatever, the taste in water and your past, present and future. I want to see how you're the beginning, middle and end of everything and so on like that. I want to see it. So this is Arjuna's desire, which brings us into this chapter, which is all about how Krishna displayed that universal form and showed Arjuna how he is all these things and how it's all working in those terms. So, now a very interesting point is that in the purport of one of these verses here, which one is it? It's verse 8. Well, anyway, you know, like from verse 1 to 4, Arjuna is requesting, then verse 5 to 8, yeah, 5 to 8, Krishna is responding and basically saying, okay, I'll show it to you then. And it's a pretty amazing form. But then in 8 he says, you know, I'll show this to you, but you cannot see it with your normal eyes. I'll have to give you special eyes. And then you'll see. So in the purport there of verse 8, this is an important purport. Prabhupada quite elaborately discusses the subject of, you know, what is, for a devotee, what does he really want to see? How does he really want to see Krishna? Does Arjuna really feel he wants to see Krishna in this way? Is it important to Arjuna? And what do you think the answer to that is? Thoughtful devotees, have a go, you know, without looking at the Bible or whatever. What do you think? Are the devotees, like very elevated devotees like Arjuna at least, they're very intimately connected with the Lord, do they really want to see the universal form? Is this of interest to them? That's correct. They already know Krishna. And even if, you know, Arjuna is seeing Krishna right in front of him face to face, has a personal relationship with him, and knowing Krishna like that face to face in his original two-armed form, the relationship is so wonderful and transcendental beyond any types, you know, whatever anything material might have to offer, that they're attracted to that. Arjuna's attracted to that, and seeing how Krishna is manifesting his potencies in the material world, you know, the material world as such, is not really very interesting to the devotees. You know, of gambling, I am cheats. The devotee's not very interested in that sort of thing. You know, amongst bodies of water, I am the ocean. It's not such a big deal for the devotee. They have something much better, which is Krishna himself. So, you know, the taste of water, that's something interesting and important and nice, but it's not such a big deal that, you know, if somehow Arjuna saw it, then he would feel, wow, this is really ecstatic. Or the light of the sun and the moon, these are very important things, but they're not as attractive and nice as Krishna himself. So Arjuna is asking, I want to see how you are manifest in all these different ways within the material world, but it is not exactly that he's asking for himself. And when Krishna shows the form, which he's just about to, then that form is not as special a form as the form of Krishna. Some people think, you know, some people at least from Hindu backgrounds think that this chapter 11 is really wonderful because Krishna is now showing the most wonderful form. You know, the most spectacular form and most impressive form, and when Arjuna saw it, it was just, you know, overwhelming. So therefore this form must be the best. But actually the fact is that this form is not the best. Although, you know, being a form of Krishna, it is very impressive. and very great and glorious in different ways, but it's not on the level of the form which Arjuna is already face to face with, and every day he's face to face with, which is the two-armed form of Krishna. So then the question arises, why? Why does Arjuna want to see this? Is it, you know, like a mistake, or what is it? Wow. Why does he want to see it? And the answer to that is, it's for the people in general. Yeah. For the ordinary people within this material world. He wants to see it. So he can then authoritatively state and make the point that the Lord exists like this, that the Lord's, he has seen that form of the Lord. And, you know, ultimately the idea is that if in the future some ordinary person encounters someone who says that, you know, guess what? I'm God. How's that? So then that the person who is, you know, being subjected to that, that he'll be able to handle it, but like Arjuna, and say, okay, that's good. You know, if you're really God, that would be fantastic. That I've met God, that would be wonderful. But just one little detail, can you just show me your universal form, please? And then, you know, the so-called God may say, well, look, you know, that's a very amazing form. You don't have the eyes to see it. And then you can say, well, just like Krishna gave Arjuna the eyes, can you give me the eyes then? Because, you know, just like Arjuna was very enthusiastic, I really want to see that form. So then, you know, he won't be able to do it. And even, you know, even if he tries to somehow slip out of it, you can say, well, look, okay, if you're not feeling like showing your universal form today, if you're not in the mood, then can you lift Govardhan Hill then? And then he says, well, look, you know, Govardhan Hill's in India. Then tell him, okay, just any of the local hills will do. And he may say, well, I am feeling a little tired today. To lift it on one finger. Say, well, use two fingers. Or can you use both hands? You know, in other words, this is a very important point in principle, that there are people who claim to be God, and generally they are not. And this is a way you can bring out the fact without just getting into sort of like a polemic. You know, like he says, I'm God. I said, no, you're not. He says, yes, I am. No, you're not. But this is some way you can actually deal with the subject and bring it to the point of establishing that that really isn't God. Yeah. So yeah, this is what's going on here. That Arjuna, he doesn't really want to see that form. He knows it's material, and, you know, it's not like we said, it's Krishna's potencies manifest in these different people and different features of the material world. It's not exactly Krishna the person, it's his energy. And therefore, you know, it's not the same. You can't have really a personal relationship with the universal form, because it's essentially just a collection of potencies, of energies, without the actual person. And he has a relationship with the person. So that's what he likes. But anyway, to help us and the people in general, Arjuna then is asking like that, and Krishna is about to show. So, let's see. So then, starting in verse 9, Sanjaya describes the vision, what Arjuna saw. Well, Krishna gave Arjuna the eyes. Prabhupada makes the point, where is that? It's in the same purport of verse 8 actually, that when Krishna allowed Arjuna to see the form, Arjuna did not have to change his mind. Of course he was already a pure devotee, but the point was, what needs to change is not the mind or the consciousness or the heart, but what needs to change is the eyes. You know, yeah, that's what Krishna gave him. Another set of eyes, which in the Sanskrit are called Divya Chakshush. So Divya can mean divine, but, you know, it's interesting, we'll see as we go through the description and Arjuna describing what he saw. We'll see there that as Arjuna is looking at this form, he sees that he is not the only one seeing it. There are other people also observing the scene. And they're not any of the human beings who are around there on the battlefield, but they're like demigods and celestial demons, very, very materially very powerful and elevated people. I mean, elevated in the sense they have great material abilities like that. They're looking at this form also. So this is a very important point, that the eyes that Arjuna was given were like a more refined or somehow more sensitive type of material eyes to see this, what is after all a material thing, the universe, in terms of the potencies of the Lord which are invested in it. Yeah, so you know, all those celestial demons, even the demigods in many cases, but particularly the demons, how are they going to see Krishna? Meaning, you know, like in his, when he is not actually present, he was present 5,000 years ago, people saw him walking around, but now who is seeing Krishna moving around? But Krishna is here, he's there in his holy name, he's there within our hearts, but people are not seeing him. We're not seeing him because we don't have the eyes. But why don't we have the eyes? Because we don't have pure consciousness. And when our consciousness does become pure, then we can see Krishna everywhere. As Lord Brahma said, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Santasadaiva Hridayeshu Valokayanti, that the pure devotees, those devotees whose eyes have been anointed with the ointment of love, they see Krishna within their hearts, and they see Krishna everywhere. So again, it's not just, you know, like glasses, you know, where are we, or oh, we're in the university, look. It's not like, you know, just some adjustment to the eyesight. But here we're talking about an actual change of the person, the quality of their character, the purity of their character, in terms of lust, anger and greed being cleansed away. Then with pure consciousness, the pure consciousness can illuminate even the material senses, and then we can see spiritually. Then we can see Krishna even here and now. So there's a difference then between these two types of eyes. The eyes of the pure devotee, who's able to see Krishna in person everywhere. based on being illuminated by the pure heart and pure consciousness, and just these more subtle types of material eyes, you know, like X-ray eyes, something like that. And the principle is like that. So you then have the eyes to see what other people can't see. But then there are other people, the more elevated people like the demigods, and they're able to see more like that. So I hope you get that point. It's a very important point. Because this word divya, we say divya chakshus, divine eyes. This word divya can refer to something transcendental. It can refer to something heavenly material, like to do with the devas, the demigods within this material world. Right, so Krishna then from 5 to 8 gives a little introduction to that form, and then Sanjaya, in starting from verse 9, begins the description. So this is broken into a number of subsections. From 9 to 13, Sanjaya says what he saw. Well, he's describing what Arjuna saw. It sounds nice. You know, it's quite spectacular, but it's also nice. Unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, this is verse 11. Unlimited wonderful vision, sounds nice. Decorated with many celestial ornaments. Oh, that's nice. Ornaments are very nice. Generally people are not frightened of ornaments, they're attractive. Raised weapons, well, anyway. Celestial garlands. Garlands, particularly celestial garlands, are very nice. So in other words, the initial vision is of something very beautiful. Very spectacular, but very beautiful at the same time. Celestial garlands and garments, beautiful clothes. Divine scents, very beautiful fragrance. Like amazing, such a beautiful fragrance. Always wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, all expanding. But basically quite nice. Not, you know, like imposing, as we'll see. It becomes more like that. Arjuna feels severely imposed upon by the whole experience. If hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. So, you know, it's quite a staggering sight, but still there's this idea of it being attractive and beautiful. So that was 9 to 13, am I right? Yeah. 9 to 13 is, we're in section B in your overview book, and it's subsection 1, which is actually verse 9 to 13. Then from 14 to 19, it's Arjuna now. It was Sanjaya. These last few verses, it's Sanjaya. Relating how he observed himself the universal form. And the experience Arjuna had from the point of view of Sanjaya. But now, the description is from 14 to 19 of Arjuna. He is now expressing himself and what he feels about the whole thing. So, we can see now, verse 14, bewildered and astonished. So that, you know, any sense of it being nice is beginning to become replaced. It's becoming more difficult to deal with. Not too difficult, but it is becoming quite difficult to deal with. His hair standing on end. Yes. Have you ever seen anyone with his hair standing on end? Is your hair standing on end? Oh, like, what are they? These spikes, right? You should see, we've got this video of the festival in Woodstock in Poland, and there's this one boy, and he has his hair like that, and I tell you, it must be that high, honestly, and like, it's really way out. So Arjuna, due to the intensity of the experience, his hair was standing on end. And he began to offer obeisances, becoming very respectful, struck in that way. And then from 15 through 19, yeah, he is expressing, you know, like his increasing mood of becoming step by step overwhelmed. So 15, he sees all the demigods, he sees Brahma, Shiva. 16, he sees many arms, bellies, mouths and eyes expanded everywhere, sees no end, no middle, no beginning. It's just like all pervasive in a way he's never experienced before. And 17, he says that, you know, it's becoming difficult, it's so effulgent, it's becoming difficult for me to look at this. Becoming very, very difficult. But the problem is, I cannot turn away. Because, you know, I look there and, wow, the effulgence is just getting too much. So I turn my back, but the effulgence is there also. And, yes, like this. Verse 19, you are without origin, middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms, and the sun and moon are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance. It's becoming, you know, like more aggressive, the universal form and its presence. Then, from verse 20, he is gradually, he says here, seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. So beginning from verse 20, this is now, from 20 to 31, this is now Arjuna sees a particular aspect of the universal form and focuses on that, and his mind is just captivated and he can't break free from that. It is not the whole form, it is a particular part of it. This is called the Kala Rupa. Kala means time, the form of time, which is one aspect of the universe. One aspect of the material world is time. But it's a very special part because it is dominating the rest. All the other things, like, you know, the oceans and the mountains and the sharks and the sages and all these different people that Krishna has said, I am, or different things, I am this, I am that, they're all under the control of time, all of them. And not just controlled by time, but ultimately they're destroyed by time. And Arjuna is now seeing that aspect of the material world. That ultimately, what does this material world mean? It means destruction. In the meantime, it may look nice. You know, some things may look attractive, impressive, but the material world ultimately means that place where everything is destroyed. And if in the meantime things look nice and impressive, it's just in the meantime till they're destroyed. Yeah. And that is really what the material world is about. And Arjuna sees this. So from 20 to 21, having gone from, you know, in 14, from bewildered and astonished, let's see here. Well, from verse 11, wondrous, brilliant, to in verse 14, bewildered, astonished. And now it's wondrous, terrible. You know, things are deteriorating here, I'm afraid. We're getting into trouble here. And then he really just, it becomes too much. So through from 20 to 31 is the description of this Kala Rupa, that all the planets with their demigods are disturbed at seeing your great form with terrible teeth. And if they're disturbed, so am I. Seeing you with many radiant colors touching the sky, your gaping mouths and your great glowing eyes, my mind is perturbed by fear. I can no longer maintain my steadiness or equilibrium of mind. 25. O Lord of Lords, O refuge of the worlds, please be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance, seeing thus your blazing death-like faces and awful teeth. In all directions I'm bewildered. Then 26 and 27, he sees in the context of time all the warriors on the battlefield racing into the mouths of this universal form and getting, wow, some of them I see them trapped with their heads smashed between your teeth. Hare Krishna. And they should definitely remain vegetarian. But he's seeing this. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen a person just get crushed. Oh, Krishna. Anyway, I haven't, but there's a description of, in India one time, the devotees were driving with Prabhupada somewhere out in the country, and they came across an accident where one youngish man had been run over by a truck, and you know, but he was like standing there, the truck came, straight into his front, and knocked him over backwards, and then ran over his body from bottom, you know, from legs to head, but only on one half, you know, and the other half was, you know, raised from the ground, but the other half had basically merged into the tarmac, and the devotees came onto the scene like, you know, 5 seconds later, and they were in the car. It was like, wow, oh, look at that. Well, you know, it was really quite a devastating experience. And Prabhupada was there. He was just chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, unaffected. Yes, so anyway, Arjuna saw things like that, but a lot of it, all these people he knew and who were dear to him, suddenly just getting literally mashed and bitten, you know, into pieces. So as the many waves of the rivers flow into the ocean, so do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouths. I see all people, not just a few people, his relatives or the warriors on the battlefield. I see all people rushing full speed into your mouths as moths dash to destruction in a blazing fire. We've all seen that, I think, isn't it? Moths, you know, so stupid. So stupid. What is so great about the light? What is so attractive that they have to, you know, just spin around and eventually get so attractive they fly into it, and that's it. So it's all craziness. But this is what he's seeing, and this is what is going on in material life. Everyone is rushing full speed. Death, here I come, ready or not. Effectively, they're not seeing it like that, but that's actually what they're doing. They're engaged, walking this path, which is going into the mouth of the universal form. But they're not, you know, like, well, you know, let's be careful here, or should we turn around? There, it's like material life, here we come. We're just going to get ahead into the mouth of the universal form. That's like that. Just like, well, the Bhagavatam actually gives the example of the frogs croaking. Prabhupada explains that when, as you breathe, well, our lifetimes are measured in numbers of breaths, not numbers of years. Numbers of breaths. So if you can slow down your breathing, you can extend your life. But the frogs, well, you know, there's an interesting principle. The frogs at night, sometimes at our temple in Durban, the frogs gather, and at night they have a big satsang. And they are just going there. And you know what it sounds like, it's not nice. But they think it is really nice. They think they're all top 10 singers. And everyone just wants to hear them. But what happens, at least classically, is that they're croaking, thinking, what nice singing I'm doing. But the snake is closing in. He lives on frogs. And so they're croaking, and he knows exactly where to go. And that's it. So they're just calling death, here I am, come and get me. Although they're not thinking like that, but that's what they're doing. So people, you know, working hard and doing aerobics, perhaps, you know, or something like that. So now they're huffing and puffing. So effectively they're calling death more quickly. I want to die more quickly. Come and get me quicker. Okay, so, but he saw it. O Vishnu, I see you devouring all people from all sides with your flaming mouths, covering all the universe with your effulgence. You're manifest with terrible, scorching rays. Wow, it's too much, isn't it? He just can't take it any longer. O Lord of Lords, so fierce of form, is verse 31. Please tell me who you are. I offer obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You're the primal Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is. So, well, you know, that's interesting. I mean, one thing which is interesting just before that is in verse 30. He addresses Krishna, O Vishnu, O Vishnu, that he knows Krishna as Krishna. But now he's saying, O Vishnu. His relationship is with Krishna. But Vishnu, he knows, is the absolute truth. But Krishna is his friend. Krishna's his friend. But what he sees here is not his friend. This is more like God. This is just, you know, beyond him. So great. So he is thinking. He is having, like, not an identity crisis, but a crisis about his understanding of Krishna. He's known Krishna many years. Actually, at this point, they are in their 80s. Although, if you look at them, they're young men, because people didn't age as fast as they do now. but they've known each other many years. And after you've known a person 80 years, you should know them, isn't it? If you've been with them practically every day, you should know them. But then suddenly, you find something out about this person. They have another side to their character that you never dreamt of. And it conflicts completely with everything you've known about them for so many years. You know, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or something even worse. Just imagine, you know Tirtharaj. What a gentle young man. Really a gentle young man. But then if you found out that he was some, you know, anyway. He's not. But you can imagine someone really close to you who you've known for years and years and years, and then as a very nice person, and then you find out that this person is actually a mass serial killer, or you know, something just totally horrible. How are you meant to digest that? So this is the experience that Arjuna is going through. You know, what am I meant to make of you? Who are you? Are you my friend? I thought you were my friend. But this is not my friend. This is something just overwhelmingly horrific and too shocking and horrendous. So, will the real Krishna please stand up? So who is the real Krishna? Who is Krishna really? Is he Arjuna's friend? Is he that Krishna? Or is he this Krishna who is just so shocking and totally dramatic? Which is the real Krishna? Well, you tell me, which is the real Krishna? It's the friend. That is the real Krishna. That is the eternal Krishna. That is who Krishna really is. So does this mean that the universal form is like a hallucination then? You know, just something non-existent, some like a mistake? No, but it's a lesser feature of Krishna. Very, very, very lesser. You know, the scale of how much less was expressed at the end of chapter 10, that in verse 41 of chapter 10, know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. With a single fragment of thyself, I pervade and support this entire universe. This is exactly what Arjuna has seen. He is seeing that part of Krishna, or Krishna's potencies, which pervade and support this entire universe. This is exactly what he's seeing. But as Krishna says, it's just a spark of my splendor. You know, it's just a little, tiny little flicker. Little, tiny little fragment. Yeah, so this universal form then is like a specialized and very, very, very much lesser feature of Krishna's nature. But the real Krishna, who this is like an expansion of, is the two-armed Krishna, who is Arjuna's friend. But anyway, seeing Arjuna has asked, then in verse 32, Krishna gives an answer in terms of the universal form. Who am I as the universal form? Well, Kalosmi, I am time, the great destroyer of the worlds. And I have come here to destroy all people. So that's the Kala Rupa. Yes. Yeah, then Krishna goes on over a few verses to let's see, where are we? 32 to 34. Yeah. 32 to 34. Krishna explains, I am time and my mission. You want to know what my mission is? I am a killer. This is his mission. You know, you get some people like soldiers or paid hitmen or whatever. And what are they? They're killers. When we were selling paintings to build the Radharamnath temples, like earlier 80s, we met one man. We went to his home to show him some paintings with his family. We asked him, what do you do? He says, I'm a soldier. And well, what do you do in the army then? So I'm in the infantry. Means he's one of the guys who takes the guns and walks out into the battlefield to shoot people. And we said, really? Why? He said, I like it. So like Arjuna, he's a warrior. He likes it. It's what he is materially. It's his nature. So the universal form is like that. An assassin. But the universal assassin, he's just going to destroy everyone. No matter how sweet and nice they are or whatever, he just crushes them. That's it. And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have any, like, what would you say, extracurricular activity. When he's working, he kills people. When he's on holiday, what he does is kill people. That's it. His life means to destroy. That is the universal form. That is the nature of this material world. And if in between things look nice, then it's just a temporary phase, not a substantial thing, but the substance will be the destruction. So based on that, Krishna says, you know, this is my business, I destroy. And you should understand, all this is now 32 to 34. All these people are destroyed by my arrangement. So you just go out and fight, and it'll be sort of like you just go through the motion, just go out and wave your sword around, and before you know, everyone will be dead. It's not like it's going to exactly matter that much. If you fight expertly or not so expertly, because by my arrangement they're already dead. So all you have to do is just go out there and close your eyes and wave your sword around and you'll get the credit. See, Arjuna fought so heroically and won the battle. And you know, Prabhupada applied this principle in terms of the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada made the point that Lord Chaitanya has already said, Priti Vityachi Yata Nagaradi Gram Sarvatra Prachara Hoibe Morana. In every town and village of this world, my name will be chanted and preached. Prabhupada explained what that meant. It doesn't just mean that we start a program village to village. We just drive into the middle of each town and village, pop out and chant for 5 minutes, and drive to the next one. Prabhupada said, no, what it means is every house will have a set of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Well, book distribution, and you know, everyone will be chanting. This is the extent that it really is indicating. Not just that the devotees like get in a van with loud speakers on the top and just drive through every town in the country playing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and then we have fulfilled that prediction of Lord Chaitanya. No, it's a much bigger thing than that. So anyway, Prabhupada made the point that Lord Chaitanya has already said that it's going to happen. And, you know, it just depends. So what have we got to do with it? whether you're enthusiastic to do it or whether you don't want to do it, doesn't really matter, it's going to happen. But it's just, as far as we're concerned, the point is, who would like to get the credit? It's going to happen. Whether you do a good job with expert preaching and try to convince people, or whether you just, you know, you don't really do so much. But the people are going to become Krishna conscious anyway. So if you'd like, you can get the credit. Just go along and be part of that, the effort to spread Krishna consciousness. And it will spread, because Lord Chaitanya has, just as Krishna is saying here, the battle's already won. They haven't started fighting. But Krishna says, the battle is already won, don't worry. So Krishna consciousness is already spread. Don't worry. Will we, you know, spread Krishna consciousness? Or will the people, are the people too demoniac? You know, should we just stay at home and chant Hare Krishna and be happy? But no, Krishna consciousness is already spread. It's just a little time separating. That's all. And it will manifest. So therefore, you should all preach Krishna consciousness. Is that okay? Make Marlborough Krishna conscious, all right? And everything else. Right. So now we're up to text 35. And let's see. 35 to 46 is Arjuna's prayers. So, you know, in different ways he glorifies Krishna. Very nicely, the first prayer, 46, is nice. That the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name. And thus everyone becomes attached to you. So the chanting of the holy names is being glorified and stressed. And, you know, in different ways, I won't read all the verses, but just in different ways, he's saying that you are very great and very wonderful, very amazing. And he says, like in 39 and 40, that you're so great, I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times. And then again. And then again. Have any of you ever tried offering obeisances 1,000 times? Raghunath Das Goswami would offer obeisances 1,000 times a day, every day, to deities, and 2,000 times a day to devotees. Yeah. So, you know, the basic idea here is that Arjuna, this whole experience, wherever he looks, 360 degrees up, down, everywhere, is just this overwhelming experience. So he doesn't know what to do. Then he thinks, oh yeah, he thinks of something to do. I know what I should do. I should offer obeisances. So, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, 1,000 times. And then down, and then up, then down again. And from the front, from the side, from the back, from the other side, from the front again. As far as he can see, that's all he can do. Yeah. Just offer obeisances. And in 41 and 42 are interesting. He apologizes to Krishna that, I thought you were my friend. Oh, you know, just a friend. An associate, and, you know, someone I sort of spend time with and knock around with. I've got nothing to do. Oh, I'll just go and see Krishna. Hang out with Krishna today. That sort of person. I thought you were my friend. So therefore, I used to just address you, oh, Krishna. Oh, Yadava. Oh, my friend. Not knowing your glories. So our acharyas explain that, you know, you might think this is not so bad, that Arjuna was addressing Krishna like this. But when he addressed Krishna as, "Oh Krishna, how are you today, Krishna?" then he was thinking that you are Krishna. You are the son of Vasudev. Vasudev works for, you know, like my uncle. Yeah. Vasudev was a minister of the king, and Arjuna was, you know, of that, in that royal, actual immediate royal family. Yudhisthira was meant to become the king, the same king, and Vasudev, the father of Krishna, would have then become an employee of Yudhisthira. So like that. In other words, you're a lesser person to me. Oh Yadava, you're a member of the Yadu dynasty. And who's the Yadu dynasty? They are a lesser royal family. The Kauravas, Yudhisthira and company, Yudhisthira would have become the emperor of the entire planet. And beneath him would have been so many kings, like regional controllers. And the Yadus, they happened to control the, like, Gujarat area, or even western Gujarat area. And they were under the Kauravas. They used to pay taxes to the Kauravas. And oh my friend, that yes, you're from a lower family, but I'm being nice to you because I'm a good guy. So I don't, you know, treat you like you're a little chappy. I treat you like you're my friend. It's just, I'm so magnanimous. So he's apologizing for doing things like that. So on he goes, you know, all sorts of different things he says. And then in verse 46, let's see where we are now. Where are we? Right. 46. Well, 46, he expresses his desire. Show me your forearmed form. I've had enough of this universal form. Show me your forearmed form. Give me a break. You know, please, be kind. So then we see that Krishna, 47, Krishna says, okay. Well, he says, 47, that, you know, you've seen this universal form, but no one has seen this form. It's interesting in the purport. Prabhupada explains, let's see, it's like, what, 6-7 lines from the bottom. Someone has commented that this form was shown to Duryodhana also. When Krishna went to Duryodhana to negotiate for peace, you've probably heard that story. And then Duryodhana tried to arrest Krishna. But unfortunately, Duryodhana did not accept the peace offer. But at that time, Krishna manifested some of his universal forms. But those forms are different from this one. In other words, this universal form which Krishna is showing is more complete than the universal form. It was a universal form, but a limited universal form that was shown to Duryodhana. But that was even so shocking. Duryodhana was sending soldiers to arrest Krishna. Krishna showed that limited universal form and the soldiers ran. They couldn't take it. So this universal form, which particularly had the Kala Rupa in it, this universal form was much greater. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Arjuna, only because he was a Kshatriya and he was used to seeing dramatic, even horrific things, he was used to it. It was almost like a daily thing for him. Battles with people getting cut in half and mashed and all this. He was used to it. And it was only because he was used to horror that he didn't die when he saw this universal form. Otherwise, the experience, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, was something like having a heart attack. It was such a powerful experience. So now Krishna, we're up around 48, 49. Krishna's withdrawing that form. In 50, Krishna shows the forearm form, and in 50 also he shows his two-arm form. So now his manusham rupam, he shows the human-like form, and then Krishna says a very interesting thing in verse 53, because in 53 he's showing the universal form. He says in 53, the form which you're seeing now, which means the two-armed form, cannot be understood simply by seeing, by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. As I am. So Krishna is making the point that this two-armed form is the most special of all forms, actually. Of course, you could say, well, Krishna was moving around 5,000 years ago. Everyone was seeing him on the battlefield. Thousands and millions of people saw him, and, you know, Dwarka, all the citizens would see him, and so on and so forth. But so many people, they would see him in a certain sense that they would see him as an ordinary human being, which means they didn't really see him for what he was. You know, it's like an actor dressed as a player. If Arjun, if we dress him up as Hamlet, Macbeth, or someone, then you may think, oh, look, there is Mr. Hamlet. So people thought, they would see Krishna, I think, oh, there's Krishna, he's just some guy from Dwarka. And, you know, maybe he's got some mystical powers, there are all sorts of rumors about him, but I can see he's just another guy. So they weren't really seeing him for what he was. They're seeing this covering of apparent humanness. So, even if people can see Krishna on a certain level, but they may not actually see him for what he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how do you see him? Get a better pair of glasses. Right? Then you can see many things. No. Verse 54, a really important verse. And again, bhakti, devotional service, is coming out right into the forefront. Only by undivided devotional service. What is the Sanskrit? Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya. Ananya bhakti. Only by ananya bhakti, unalloyed devotional service. Undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. And verse 55, my dear Arjuna, he who engages in pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So, you know, verse 54 is saying that if you do this, if you do devotional service, you can see, you can understand Krishna, you can see him. Verse 55 is saying, if you do devotional service, you'll definitely come to me. Not just see me, that, oh, there he is, and then maybe you lose sight. But you'll actually come to Krishna and enter into a relationship with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so now I think it's time, isn't it? Are they ready?
Yeah.
Prasadam is coming. No, prasadam has come. Okay. So we'll take a prasadam break, refueling break, and we'll gather again in 3-5 minutes or so. Srila Prabhupada ki.